Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. What's up, OUXers? It's just me today, solo podcast, and I'm going to talk about 9 traits of a high-value UX designer. So I recently wrote a newsletter on this, and I just got so fired up. I got so fired up that I miscounted them. I said that it was 10 traits. It's only 9, okay? So I'm going to be going over my newsletter. I'm going to be reading it, but I'm going to be doing a lot of additional storytelling and going off on tangents as I do. So I am going to be like using the newsletter as an outline. So if you read that newsletter, I mean, you might need to just hear this again. I need to hear this again and again and again. So if you're not on the newsletter and you want to be on the newsletter, go to oux.com/newsletter. And then you're also going to get a free copy of the OUX launch guide. It's like 55 pages of getting started in OUX. Everything you need to know to start becoming dangerous with some object mapping and a lot of the core skills and the core concepts behind OUX. So go hop on the newsletter, oux.com/newsletter, and you'll get my podcast scripts before I record them. I've done this quite a few times. So I'm probably going to be doing quite a few more solo episodes. I really want to get back to my Orca series. The next one is going to be the on attributes. So I'm excited to record that. And I'm just going to keep going with those. So I have a few interviews scheduled, but yeah, it's going to be just a lot of me for a while. And hopefully that's okay. Okay, so before I get started on these 9 traits of a high-value UX designer, let's set the stage here. Okay, there has been some talk recently about how this trendy career of UX is dying out. And yeah, okay, the job market feels tough. Leadership seems to be getting disillusioned with UX efforts not paying off as expected. So, and the layoffs seem endless. I get it. Does this mean that UX is actually dying and you need to go seek out a career change? Of course not. All right. So some of my favorite voices, there's kind of like this idea that, yeah, UX is dying and you got to figure out something else to do. And then there's this other more nuanced voice out there. And in my mind, more accurate, and I'm going to amplify that voice and that take, is this. What we are seeing is a market correction of a UX bubble. We are seeing that. We are not seeing the phasing out of an entire career path that is meant to humanize technology. That would be wacky, all right? All right, think about it. And you probably heard me say this before. How many times this week have you been frustrated with technology? I feel like this is a massive part of my life, is just being frustrated with technology. I think like 200 times, okay? This does not mean that we need to get rid of UXers. This does not mean that UX just isn't working and we're just doomed to have frustrating technology. This means we need more and better UXers. There has been a UX bubble because here's the thing. Companies have been hiring junior UI designers fresh out of boot camps when what they really need are complexity wrangling UX bosses, okay? The main output of the UX industry has been wireframes, often very pretty wireframes, built too fast because they're not given enough time, that don't fully meet the user's business needs, that don't holistically fit within a product, and those wireframes are often ill-informed. I had a client once recently say that she knew, so she's a business stakeholder, and she said, and she hired me, she's a client, and she said, I knew that the UX designer we had on staff was not good because when he was reviewing his wireframes, he just said, well, I didn't really know what this was, so I just put it here. I'm going to just pause, let that sink in. I didn't really know what this was, so I just put it here. Whew. Okay, by the time you're at screen design, you better know what all those little pieces are. There's no, I didn't know what this was, so I just put that here. Okay, I didn't know what this was, so I just put it here. That is the reason that there's probably lots of reasons. There's massive layoffs. That is the reason that we are in a UX bubble that is popping right now, because I think we've got a lot of people out there that are saying or thinking things like that. And sometimes not to their own fault, okay? Sometimes it's just like you don't have enough time and we're being pressured to get screens designed and have wireframes yesterday, but we don't have really good tools and really good sound bites and strategies to push back on that and to help our business stakeholders understand the risk. What is the risk of me designing screens without fully understanding them? Okay, so already going on lots of rants. All right, so I truly believe that too many, quote, UX designers are focusing on their Figma hard skills, focusing on UI, or on the other side, focusing on this like super high level, and to be honest, a bit hand wavy, or what feels a bit hand wavy, UX vision and strategy. UX vision and strategy, super effing important, but we've got to make sure it's grounded. We've got to make sure that we don't seem like we're wasting money, okay? All right, or these massive research projects, they're like, we just need to understand the emotions and mindset of our user and their deepest fears. Like, yes, that is great, but what you really need to understand about your users is how they think about the problem, all right? And you need to make sure that UX research is very, very pointed. It needs to be more of a scalpel. And anyway, so that's all I'll say about that. I might say more about that. We'll see. So what we need to do is we need to fill in the skills in this messy middle of the double diamond. So we got one side of the diamond, which is that UX strategy and research and figuring out what the problem is. Okay, great. We're doing really well on that. I think we have all those skills. And then we're pretty good over on the other diamond, where it's about the UI and designing the screens and making sure we've got these design systems, these banging design systems now. And people in general are getting pretty good at understanding how to implement a design system. All right, implementing a design system, if you're getting paid like $100,000 a year to implement a design system, you are probably being overpaid. Okay, to be perfectly honest, I probably feel like I'm going to say that a lot. There's a little bit of some hot takes here. Oh man. Okay. Don't get too mad at me. It's tough love. And this is just the opinion of Sophia, right? So we need to fill in that messy middle. Okay. So we've got a bunch of research, or good enough research, right? How can we start synthesizing that research, doing some system design, figuring out the gotchas, figuring out our blind spots so that we can pop it back to research, figuring out at least the basic information architecture that then UI can hang on, all right? So the ability to solve problems here in this messy middle of the double diamond, which I think is a triple diamond, got an article on that, the triple diamond, that's ORCA right there, the objects, relationships, CTAs, and attributes. The ability to solve problems here and do synthesis here and do analysis here is what I believe makes a high value UX designer, okay? And we're gonna get into all the details of that. So what is a high value UX designer? A high value UX designer is the one that doesn't get cut, that gets the job, that keeps the job, and gets promoted too, all right? So that's what really, and probably what is meaningful for you, right? That actually is creating so much value that they become indispensable, right? They're indispensable because they understand the business, they understand the technology, they understand the domain better than anybody else. And one other thing before I get into my 9, not 10, points, which I've split up into 6 understandings and 3 actions. Before I get into that, one other thing that I want to just get into is when it comes to a company's competitive edge, it is ORCA. All right. If you have the exact same objects, relationships, things that you can do to the objects and attributes as your competitor, it's going to be pretty tough for somebody to decide on which one to go with. And you're going to be competing on price. You're going to be competing on how pretty you are, your branding, your marketing, which is all very important. You're going to be also competing on how stable the technology is. That is also very, very important. But those are not really the real job of a UX designer. All right. The real job of a UX designer is not like making sure that it's marketed nicely, right? That would be a marketing designer. The real job of a UX designer isn't making sure that things are bug-free, all right? That we got to leave that to our developers. Like, it needs to be performative for sure. And you can definitely compete on performance, but those are more and more becoming commodities, all right? So again, if you and your competitor have the exact same objects, relationships, calls to action, and attributes, you're going to be competing on something that's pretty difficult to compete on. If you want to create a true competitive edge, like a competitive edge that is deep within the bones of a product, you got to make sure that you can analyze, define, and design the orca. All right? Okay. All right. So that all said, let's get into it. We're going to start off with these six things to understand to make you more indispensable and actually more fulfilled at work too. Being indispensable feels really good. All right. So number one, understand basic human psychology and the way the brain perceives information. So if you understand this, you're going to waste less time on testing and reworking designs that were doomed to fail, okay? In other words, you'll get to better design faster. So no hiring manager really cares that you understand about psychology and you know about the visual cortex and you know about the what and the where pathway. They don't care about that. What they want, though, is less iteration / rework in usability testing, because you put things in front of a user that, like, if you really understood how people perceive information, especially how they perceive information visually, all right, and how people perceive words, okay, you would be spending a whole lot less time in usability testing, or, you know, if there's no usability testing, just getting it out and not working as well. All right, so understanding basic human psychology so you can just get to better designs faster. All right. Two, understand complex business requirements. And of course, the simple business requirements too. But understand those complex business requirements through and through, ensuring your design actually makes sense within the context of business processes and rules. And here's the thing, understanding these constraints breed creativity. And understanding those constraints can actually be really fun if you have the right tools. All right. This is a big puzzle, y'all. And puzzles without constraints is just finger painting, right? It's not a puzzle anymore. You have to have constraints. But if you are solving a puzzle, and to use Andrea Newhoff's metaphor, which I use all the time, solving a puzzle where all the pieces are face down, where some pieces are missing, where there's pieces from another puzzle thrown in there, is not fun. That's not fun. You're not set up to succeed, right? Solving a puzzle where all the pieces are face up, you know you have all the pieces on the table, everybody's working on the same puzzle, you're not like, actually, I think like this, I don't even know if this is the puzzle I should be solving. You're very confident that this is the puzzle you should be solving, and you have tools and methods to solve that puzzle, and it feels good. That's fun, all right? So understand those complex business requirements. Understand those constraints so you're not creating designs, you know, number one. To go back to number one is we don't want to design, put things in front of the user that they were just never going to understand anyway, that was going to be confusing, right? And then just kind of like, oh, that was confusing. Let's try it another way. And then that's still confusing. And let's try it. And then you just like happen upon a design that works. Like, that's not very effective. And then also designing a bunch of screens and then getting it in front of the business folks. And they're like, ooh, actually, we need another option here. And like, what about this? And you're like, okay, back to the drawing board. That's not very efficient either. Okay, so understanding those complex business requirements before you get to screen design, before, and having good tools to do that. And guess what? Orca helps with both of those. Orca helps with all of these. All right. Number three, understand what makes the business money. What business objects have dollar signs attached? Now, you could think, okay, I understand what the business, like, what makes the business money. Like, this is the value that we're trading, all right? This is what the user trades, they give us money, and these are the plans that we have, and this is what our plans cost. That's how, and we need more people signing up for our plans, right? Okay, like, at a very high level, most UX designers understand how the business generally makes money. But you can be much more granular with this and have a better understanding through the Orca process, because each one of these pillars of Orca, you can put dollar signs next to those, especially your objects. CTAs too. Relationships, yeah, even relationships. The fact that like we can connect these objects and our competitor can't connect these objects. Mm-hmm. Like no one in the industry is connecting these things and giving insights to people on the way that these things are connecting. all of a sudden, if we can connect them, there's a dollar sign attached to that. That's a competitive edge, right? Attributes. Nobody else in the industry has this particular attribute. Like we, or, you know, like, but objects, let's go back to objects. Objects for the most part. So I recently was working with a client and I failed to get really clear on this. And I was sending us in some other directions during our workshop. And I had to step back and say, wait a second, which object here is the one that makes y'all money? And it was the appointment object. Everything else was in service of getting people to book appointments. So appointment object and the book CTA, $3 signs next to each of those. And some of the other objects were like, this is a $2 sign object. This is a $1 sign object. So you can actually get much more granular in understanding which things actually make the business money. And that is going to make you very valuable if you understand that. Okay. Number four, understand the why. I don't know why I snapped. I'm just so fired up about this, y'all. I feel very strongly about this. Okay, number four, understand the wider domain or industry that the organization works within. So high-value UXers, they widen their periphery. They can see the system they are working on and how it operates in a larger context. They go one to two to even three levels wider. They understand the competition. They understand the lingo of the domain. They understand various roles, various players. So if you're working in healthcare, you understand the basics of HIPAA, all right? If you are working in insurance, you understand the basics of how, maybe even like how doctors bill, all right? So like, those are just some examples. But if you are also, let's say you are stuck in a very myopic situation. So there is a large home improvement store that I have the benefit to tell the story to the benefit to know a little bit how their team is structured, and they have an entire team for the product detail page. This is just like, I have a SMH moment, like, oh my God, not the product object. They have an entire team for the product detail page. Now, if you're stuck in a situation like that, one, maybe figure out a way to get out. That is so myopic. But if you are like, oh man, my hands feel really tied. What you need to do is you need to understand, okay, does this page or section or feature, what objects are here, what objects do they represent, and how does it show up in other places? So if I was on that team and I was like, okay, I'm part of the design team for the product detail page. All right, I am on the design team for the product object, the main piece of the product object. So I want to really understand, where else does product show up? How do product show up in the cart? How do product show up in search results? How does product show up on department detail pages? How do product show up within orders? Okay, how do product show up within the compare screen, right? I want to really understand that even if I might not have control over designing it, I want to know who does have control over designing it. All right. I want to know how people get into the product detail page. How do people get out of the product detail page? I want to understand as much as I possibly can about the wider context. Okay. Number five, understand how data works and how it affects the user experience. Again, like so many UX designers are like, oh, but math and data, like, no. Okay, this again, it can be way more fun. I am not a math person. I failed at learning HTML and CSS. Like, I do not code. High value UXers, I do not believe, need to know how to code. All right, we're just stepping on toes. But we need to understand data. We need to potentially need to learn kind of be able to read code. So I can read some code, but I'm not gonna write it. And when it comes to data and databases, I kind of went through this roundabout way of understanding it, but now that I do, it's so fun. It goes back to that puzzle. It's a puzzle, y'all. It shouldn't be intimidating. And I can tell you, so many UX designers that come into my course, UX designers that are already like, they're listening to the podcast, they're reading all the free material, and then they come into my course and it becomes very clear that they don't understand the difference between sorting and filtering. They don't understand that this kind of metadata here is for sorting, while this metadata is much better for filtering. And sorting on this metadata would actually be kind of weird. And grouping, wait, what is grouping? There's grouping, there's sorting, there's filtering. Okay, they can't really design the logic of a recommendation engine or a simple algorithm. And again, I'm not talking about coding, it's just, you have a piece of metadata, like say popularity. Okay, well, how are we determining popularity? Is it number of clicks? Is it number of likes? Is it how long people stay on the page? Is it how many times people have bookmarked it? Or is it an algorithm of all that? What about like a recommendation engine of like, how are we recommending books to a user? Well, we need to look at the attributes of a book and we need to look at the attributes of a person and we need to do some matching, all right? And that can all be really, really fun. It doesn't have to be code. It's a matter of being able to be really intimate with your attributes. And if one object is being, you know, recommended to another object, right? If you're looking at this event, here's some products you might like, all right? So how do we determine that? Or if you're looking at this event, here are some similar events. Well, what does similar mean, y'all? You can't just go to a developer, oh, show similar events. What is similar? Is it, what attributes are we going to look at? And how are we going to prioritize that attributes? Is similar based on location? Is similar based on the venue that it's at? Is it, well, venue and location is kind of the same thing. Is it based on the friends? You have other friends that are going to this event? Like, what is it? All right. You can tell I'm getting even more excited. Like, y'all, we need to understand data. We don't need to code, but we need to be able to understand data. If you don't feel like very comfortable with this, but you're like, that sounds cool and fun, come take my course. OUX.com/masterclass. Come take my course. It'll be so worth your money. All right. Number six, understand the technical landscape of the product and the constraints of the legacy code or platforms. Again, there is no need to learn to code, but you do need to be able to effectively communicate and understand the people that do. This is coming back to those constraints, which can be fun, all right? Understanding like where is the technical landscape really putting us between a rock and a hard place? Having those conversations early on before you start designing screens so that you can communicate to your developers and say, this hard place right here, this rock right here is really going to impact our user experience. This is a priority to remove this rock, right? What is the level of effort going to take? And can you go ahead and get started on that while I'm working on wireframes? Right? Because we're getting on the same page before that design happens. Okay. So how do we bring in developers earlier so that they can help us smooth out the technical landscape? All right. And then also tell us like, no, this is like, we can't change this right now. So how do we effectively design around it? Okay. Constraints, y'all. Understand the constraints. So those are the six understandings: basic human psychology, complex business requirements, what makes the business money, the wider domain or the industry, how data actually works, and the technical landscape within your particular product. Understand those things. The more a UXer understands all of those things, the more high value they will be. So now it's time to put all that understanding into action. And here's what ridiculously valuable UX designers do with all that understanding. First, model, diagram, and articulate all of the above, communicating it to the team to get everyone on the same page. Okay. Secret here. Like, I believe that great UXers often don't have to make many decisions themselves. They need to be expert understanders who can visualize complexity and help others understand, bring others into the complexity where they need to come in so that they can collaborate and make decisions. All right. Yeah, we're going to make decisions, but often it's more about understanding all the things that I just talked about, and then modeling it and diagramming it in a way that people can collaborate on it before you get into screens. It's not understand all that stuff and then design some screens. It's understand all that stuff and create loose diagrams with really great color coding and really collaborative, which guess what? We got all those tools. We got those tools. All right. Number two, create artifacts that directly and clearly translate to UI and screen design, but don't step on the toes of the UI and visual designers. Now, this is a very fine balancing act that the OUX process really helps you out with, okay? So what we want to do, I see diagrams all the time, or we create these diagrams or these visualizations sometimes that are helpful, but then at the same time, it's like, how do we actually translate that into screens? And so the object map is this direct translation. It's basically like a prototype of your prototype. All right, but it's super light. You can move the sticky notes around. You've got color coding in there. So it's devoid of any UI, but it directly translates into UI. Okay, so it empowers your UI and your visual designers and lets them shine So you're not doing things like determining micro interactions and whether something is, this is an expand and collapse panel or this is a flyout diagram. Like, I don't care. I don't care whether it's expand and collapse. I want it to be accessible. I want it to be on brand. I want to use the existing pattern library if we've got one. But you decide that. You decide that. That's not up to me. I just know that there's progressive disclosure here. Like, these attributes are lower priority. So just, we can probably have some progressive disclosure. That's what I want to determine as a high-value UX designer, where I am really in my, I would say, I'm in my highest power. So what you need to do is you need to stop making production screen design a big part of your job. All right, if you're a mid to senior UXer, your company is overpaying you for this work, all right, is more and more becoming a commodity, all right? This is stuff that can be outsourced, all right? Orca is much harder to outsource, all right? It's much more collaborative. It's great to be in person for it, all right? Moving those sticky notes around. Yeah, Miro, Mural, Whimsical, love ya, but I am always going to go for those in-person sticky notes. Embodied cognition, moving things around with people in the room, seeing body language, facilitating this kind of work, that is tough to outsource. All right, that will make you very, very irreplaceable. All right, number three, identify high-risk assumptions that are internally unanswerable and feed them back to UX research efforts, making UX research more focused, effective, and valuable. So this is another thing, going through this gauntlet between the double diamonds, you're often kicking stuff back into research, all right? But like really specific stuff, okay? Like add this to your next user interview. So for example, how do patients think about appointments versus visits? Are those two different things in the mental model? Or are those kind of the same thing? If I'm looking at a past visit, what information is the most important versus a future appointment? Okay, so prioritization of attributes, whether objects are one thing or two things, or they directly, how do they relate to each other? This, the Orca process helps us really dig out our blind spots when it comes to the user's mental model about a problem domain. And then we can create that list of questions and we can, whether we're also doing the UX research or we have a UX research team, then we can feed that back to UX research and make them look good because they are asking very, very, especially high risk questions. Like if we don't get this, if we don't really understand this, we're going to be in trouble, right? And the Orca process helps you uncover those, all right? Blind spots you didn't even realize you had, all right? I mean, if you go through a 4 or 5 hour workshop, Orca workshop, or 4 or 5 day workshop, okay, and you come up with just one thing, one high risk assumption that you didn't know you had, and it goes back to research and you figure that out, that could easily save $100,000, right? And usually you'll come up with way more than that during an Orca sprint. All right, and in general, I talked about making UX research look good, feeding, and your UI designers too, empowering them to do their best work, right? Empowering UX research to do their best work. In general, high value professionals, UX or otherwise, amplify the value of the other professionals they work with. Okay, all ships rise with the rising tide. Okay, we're not in competition with our team members here. As high-value UX designers, we make business stakeholders look good because we make it easier for them to make tough decisions and we give and help them give feedback on proposed solutions in an easier way. All right, we help them collaborate better where they are at their highest. We help the UI and we help the visual designers shine by creating really strong bones for screen designs to hang on. And we serve UX research by zeroing in on the most important questions to get in front of users. All right, so this might all sound like a lot, and it is. All right, that's what makes it high value, y'all. But it can be really fun and really exciting if you've got skills and frameworks to do this work. And surprise, surprise, I've been saying this the whole time. Here's the good news. OUX and the Orca process help with every single one of these points. All 9, not 10 of them. All right. There's probably a 10th one. If I sat down and thought about it for 3 minutes, I could probably come up with a 10th one. All right. It's going to help you understand all those things. It's going to help you put all that understanding into clear, actionable action, all right? Okay, so if you want to get going, all right, OUX.com/masterclass, Get into it, y'all. I have to say this. You get what you pay for. I put out a lot of free content. I really do. People say, oh, you're so generous with all your free content. I am. I am generous with my free content, but I also save the goody goodies, the goody, 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 good stuffs, okay? I save that for the OUX Masterclass. That's where it all is, all right? And we've got an amazing community, forum.oux.com. You can join for free, but when you do join the OUX Masterclass, you get open to a lot more spaces with a lot more good stuff. So hope to see you in the forum. Hope to see you in the Masterclass. And happy OUXing as you become a higher and higher value UXer so you can feel very, very comfortable in the job market and know that you are so indispensable to your team. All right. Cheers, y'all. Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!